Good morning, and thank you for giving me this opportunity to spend a few minutes with you. I'm going to discuss some work we've recently done on race-specific patterns and determinants of alcohol use among a sample of men who have sex with men. So just a very brief background, sort of consistent in the alcohol literature. There have been many consistent reports that non-Hispanic blacks report lower levels of alcohol use, misuse, and disorder. But on the flip side, people with alternate sexualities have often been found to have higher levels of disorder. So when I was reading this literature, I thought, well, what happens if you are both? So for example, if you are both black and gay, where do you fall in this? And what was interesting to me is part of this, we were collecting data at the time for the New York City M2M study, which I'll talk about in a second. So I thought, I have a unique opportunity to ask these questions. So as I said, I wanted to ask a question about do we see the same drinking patterns? Also, does that, if we see an effect of race, is it really race or is it something that sort of travels along with race? And do the correlates that we've talked about previously in the literature differ by race among MSM? So as I said, we were collecting data for the New York City M2M parent study, which was a cross-sectional study of 1,500 men who have sex with men who reside in New York City. So on the left-hand side of the slide, you can see the eligibility for the parent study. You had to be 18 or older, born biologically male, communicate in English or Spanish, and report anal sex with a man in the 6 months prior to interview, residing in New York City, as I said, and willing and able to give informed consent. But since I was interested in looking at the differences between non-Hispanic blacks and whites, the additional eligibility criteria for my analysis were that you identified as either black or white. That's obviously based on self-report, and that we had some alcohol information for you. We asked a gate question of have you ever had a drink, and people who either simply skipped the question or refused to answer were skip patterned out of the rest, so we know nothing about them. So as I said, our main exposure was self-reported race, and our main outcome was meeting criteria for hazardous drinking using the Audit C, which is, for those of you who are not familiar with the Audit C, it is a validated brief form of the audit. If you accumulate 4 or more points, you are considered to meet criteria for hazardous drinking. We also collected information on correlates of drinking, such as other sociodemographics, obviously besides race, potentially protective factors, so things like racial identity or attachment to community, social support, family, and potentially exacerbating factors like other drug use or depression, anxiety, other psychosocial vulnerabilities. So just to give you a little bit of a sort of flavor of our sample here, when we compared sort of non-Hispanic whites and non-Hispanic blacks, we saw that on average blacks were a little bit younger, they were less likely to have attended college, they were more likely in our sample, unfortunately, to be unemployed. They made less money, they were more likely to identify as heterosexual, but we noticed that the age in which they reported that they came out was really not statistically different. If there is a star next to it, it is statistically significant at the 0.05 level. So okay, really sort of more interesting results are what we found for alcohol. So this is a largely non-abstinent sample. Pretty much everybody had had a drink at some point in their life. Blacks, on average, initiated drinking about a year later, and that's pretty consistent with other things we've seen in the literature. And in the past 3 months, 95% and 98% of our samples drank, so, you know, again, not an abstinent population. And to answer our first aim, 45% of non-Hispanic blacks and 65% of non-Hispanic whites met criteria for hazardous drinking. So when we look at this in terms of an odds ratio, you get an unadjusted odds ratio of 0.43. So yes, it's protective, so we can check that off on the aim, but we can't forget that we're talking about 45% and 65% of our sample, and in fact, of our analytic sample, 56% overall met criteria for hazardous drinking. So yay for protective, but still concerning in terms of actual numbers. So then I was sort of wondering about when we talk about race in an unadjusted model, is it really race? Is that something specific? Or is it just whatever travels along with it? Is it lower income? Is it different education? So we built these these logistic regression models using conceptually related sets of factors. So again, sociodemographics, psychosocial vulnerability, and no matter what we did, we could not remove the effect of race. So So it is actually an independent effect. Okay, but the more interesting things is, as I said, our third aim was to look at whether or not the correlates that have been discussed in the literature differ by race. So we ran stratified models, and what we found among non-Hispanic black men in our sample was sort of what we were expecting to see, what's consistent with the literature. Older age was protective, but other drug use was exacerbating. And we did, just because it was a slide a few back, there were 374 black men in this sample, so not a small sample, not as large as others have been, but I was a little bit surprised to see that nothing else remained significant in multivariate models. Now, the interesting thing, I think, comes when we look at the other side of the equation. So when we looked among white men, we found the things that we were sort of expecting to see. Again, older age was protective, other drug use was exacerbating, higher income. That's all pretty consistent with the literature. Here's where things get interesting. We found that in our sample, higher levels of internalized homophobia, and I'm not sure if everyone is familiar with this, it is a concept of the internalization of sort of anti-gay feelings. And in our study, we used a modified version of Herrick's scale, which is a modification of Myers' scale. And essentially, it tapped questions such as, you know, I'm ashamed to be gay, I wish I weren't gay, things like that. So you're tapping a real sort of internal feeling. And what we found was that it was protective against meeting criteria, which, as I put in red, is the interesting part where you say, what do you really mean by interesting? And the answer is, I'm not 100% sure yet. But we are to date, as far as we know, the first group to have found a protective effect, but we are certainly sort of in the middle of a disjointed literature. People have either found no effect, or they have found it to be a risk factor. We're not really sure what's going on here, and I will just say I can't rule out the fact that it's a statistical artifact, but I'm really hoping it's not. And also, to kind of be, again, in the middle of a slightly conflicted literature, we found that higher levels of gay community involvement were associated, were exacerbating, essentially. But it's a very sort of small effect, and that is also consistent with the literature that has found either slight elevations, no association. I think it sort of depends on how different studies have asked these questions. In our study, when we asked about gay community involvement, we asked about feeling like an important part of the gay community, that it was important to your identity, that you were involved with organizations, but we didn't necessarily ask how many circuit parties did you go to last year. So we may be tapping something that's slightly different study to study. So with any study, we have strengths and limitations. Our parent study was a large, diverse sample. We used a validated screener for the outcome. We used, as someone mentioned earlier, an ICASI to minimize social desirability, and we tried to use a relatively short recall frame, the past 3 months, to limit recall bias to, you know, especially since we're asking about alcohol-related behaviors, and we know that over the long-term alcohol use can affect your recall. So we're hoping to keep it short. But, you know, I'd say with any study, we have several limitations. This is a cross-sectional study, so we can make no comments on causation or the directions of any of these associations. Everything is based on self-report, and the AuditSee is a screener, which we can't really use to diagnose alcohol use disorders, and there's been some recent discussion about what the appropriate cutoffs are in different groups. We tended to stick with what was in the literature, which is 4 points, but perhaps that's not the correct cutoff in men who have sex with men. And we didn't collect information on drinking motivation, so there's a lot, like I said, with that internalized homophobia that we really don't quite understand. So just to briefly sum up, non-Hispanic blacks were indeed less likely to meet criteria for hazardous drinking, but as I said, the story's not all good. I mean, 45% of our sample still meeting that criteria, and that means that you were drinking frequently and heavily, not necessarily binge, because there are multiple ways to get that score. But that's still a place that could really scream out for intervention. I think the story has been so long told that, oh, you know, non-Hispanic blacks are much less likely to have all of these alcohol problems, And yet here in this sample, I would argue that's not necessarily true, even though the statistics tell us it's true. So we found that we could not totally erase the effect of race, so we think that it's an independent. But it's that we don't really understand how some of these psychosocial vulnerabilities, like internalized homophobia or other things, influence drinking patterns. And I think it would be really helpful if we had collected information on drinking motivations, because as Dr. Carey pointed out earlier, it could be a social thing or it could be coping. And from our data, we just don't know. So I'd like to take a quick minute to acknowledge the National Institute of Child Health and Human Development for funding the M2M project, and the New York Blood Center and Project Achieve, and all of the great mentorship that I've received from Dr. Fry and Dr. Koblin. I'd like to thank the participants, without whom none of this is possible, and the Project Achieve staff, who does all of the nuts and bolts day-to-day work. I'd also like to thank Dr. Hazen and the Columbia University T32 grant. So, thank you.